This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to Speaking for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you why the Rockets' obsession with the refs is going to cost them. But we start today with Kevin Durant. All right, with LeBron James sidelined from the playoffs and distracted by his interest outside of basketball, there's a race to redefine Golden State Warriors star Kevin Durant as the best player on the planet. Bulls great Scottie Pippen says he can definitely see a comparison between Durant and Michael Jordan. Former player turned NBA analyst Richard Jefferson says Durant is the most unguardable human ever created. Yesterday, Fox Sports Radio host Doug Gottlieb stopped by my dressing room to compare Durant to six-time MVP, six-time champion, and all-time leading scorer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Last week, when Durant vanquished the Clippers from the playoffs, Lou Williams gave the best summation of the new perspective gaining momentum about KD.
Sometimes you come across special people, and it doesn't matter what you send to them. It's no scheme. It's no defense. It's no nothing that you can do with special people. He's one of them, and he showed it tonight. He put them guys on his shoulders. And even the game that he came out, he was like, I'm Kevin Durant. Y'all know who I am. And That's a bold statement to make when you're about to go see some guys that's extremely competitive. And he came out that game, and he said, I can really shoot over these guys. And he did it. So it wasn't lack of effort on our part. He's an all-world professional, and he proved himself. He proved exactly who people think he is, who he think he is himself, and he did it. And you tilt your hat off to a guy like that.
Okay, now it's my turn. Kevin Durant is the smartest player in basketball. He's played a very patient game of chess while many of us, including yours truly, have evaluated him like he's playing checkers. When Durant left Oklahoma City for Golden State, I labeled him as soft and sensitive. The truth is, his move to the Warriors was driven by his understanding of the game and his understanding of Russell Westbrook. It wasn't soft, it was brilliant. Durant moved away from a dumb, selfish culture to a smart, unselfish one. It's exactly what he needed at the time. He had to get away from Westbrook's toxic style. Why settle for the second or third best culture? Go for the best. Have you been listening to what Durant has been saying this season, whether he's talking about the fall of the American media business model or the way the Clippers defended him early in their playoff series? Durant routinely sounds like one of the smartest guys in the room.
We hear David and Goliath a lot growing up, you know, so that story is pretty much prominent in people's minds. So when you put that out there on the court against me, then the ref's gonna give him a little bit more. So when he run up on me like a pit bull, grab me, hold me, I don't mind it. That's how he make his money. That's how he feed his family. But if I throw something back, then let us play. I'm not gonna get in the way of the game because, you know, I wanna have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverly. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am.
Durant's sensitivity and thin skin are really the sin of intelligence. He thinks too much. He knows too much. He's introspective and self-aware in a real way. He engages with and responds to his critics because he has a fearless curiosity. Smart people operate outside their bubble because they seek enlightenment. People pretending to be smart create public bubbles, like HBO talk shows, where they engage with sycophants and promote it as authentic, fearless conversation.
Woo.
Before his career is done, Kevin Durant might outsmart everyone and wind up the true challenger to Jordan's throne. All right, joining the desk now is Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson, and making his Speak for Yourself debut, former NBA champion and Kevin Durant teammate, Kendrick Perkins. Welcome to the show.
Thanks,
Marcellus, I'll start with you. Does KD's intelligence make him misunderstood?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just his intelligence, but we got to think about the people who are truly genius at anything. Usually they take two paths. Either they're despondent, they kind of stay away. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, man, y'all ain't smart enough to even have small talk.
Exactly.
Out my face, right?
Right.
Or you dive into it because you really feel like I could always rise back to my level, but let me help everybody else reach their optimal levels. KD takes that and expands it. He goes beyond intelligence, and he gets into a world we call he's too sensitive. His sensitivity is something that I think is really genius. Think about it. Michael Jordan sat up there in his Hall of Fame speech crying about all the little things, all the slights, all the things that got to him that he never wore on his sleeve, but it was his motivation. KD is like, I'm gonna wear it on my sleeve. I'm gonna attack it in the moment. And I'm gonna use all that as my fuel in the moment and expand my greatness. It's amazing how sports is a microcosm of life. And then KD is like, I'm using a life principle in sports. That means if you do something to me, I will have an equal and opposite response. Mm-hmm. And he does it on the court every single time. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get caught up in the little battles. Mm-hmm. He gets caught up in the big picture, always in mind, while still reminding you of his greatness. Intelligence and sensitivity, we've given it the wrong connotation. Mm-hmm. It's amazing when KD performs.
I'm going to push back just a little bit, because I think early in KD's career, maybe Kendrick can speak to this, he wasn't as vocal, outspoken. His sensitivity did come out. I don't think it was a direct, precise measure as far as how he's going to control the narrative. I think it was just him. I think he's grown into now being at Golden State, a more vocal person. He's always been intelligent, but we haven't seen that side of him to his growth, okay, which is now to where he's at.
Let me ask you this, Jim. I think sometimes silence is the biggest sign of intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
When he's young, he's just taking it all in and learning. Now that he's a full-grown man, now it's time to speak.
Well, and it's also a wise man listens, okay? Then he speaks. But I don't know if he was, from a strategic perspective, saying, I'm going to use this as a platform to later show my intelligence as I get older.
Oh, it was strategic, but I'll get to that.
It was definitely strategic. I think as he's grown, he understands how to maneuver and utilize that, and now he's speaking out a lot more. And Kendrick, you can speak to this a little bit more.
Well, he has grown, but let me enlighten y'all on something. When KD was in OKC, he couldn't be KD. He always been intelligent. Ever since I got traded to the Thunder in 2011, KD has always been an intelligent human being. He knows the game of basketball. He knows things that goes on in the world. He is really, really smart. He left OKC and he was able to be KD. He was able to be outspoken. And there's no knock on the Thunder organization, but they mimic the Spurs organization. Sam Presti grew up under Greg Popovich. So their culture is a lot different. They run their organization the same way. And so when KD left to go to Golden State, now y'all able to see KD speak out and say different things and go about handling, you know, things the way he need to handle it, because he's able to do that. He has the freedom now. The freedom to be Kevin.
I like that point. Mm-hmm. He said Greg Popovich controls everything.
Yes.
Sam Presti, these guys trying to mimic that.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was really a calculated response from a guy who walks into the room, first must read the room, understand the dynamics of it. And that's intelligence as well. When to apply pressure and when to stand back and let others do it. And we saw Russell Westbrook and how he was maniacal in his way of playing the game. And Kevin Durant kind of played the 1B of that. Mm. But you know what? He also came out in April of 2013 and said, I'm tired of being second.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when he said that, it was quote after quote of why he's tired of being second. Yep. What happened the next year? MVP. Only MVP he's ever had. After that, I wanted a change in culture and style of play. Then I went out to Golden State, two-time finals MVP. Like, all of this stuff is not just happening by coincidence. This is correlation to a person that says, you know what, now it's time to hit the gas, and he's doing it.
And as a friend, I was mad at KD about going to Golden State. I couldn't understand it. I thought he was going home to D.C. And now, What do I know?
Yeah.
Smart move on this part.
But I'm going to say this. I think it's a level of maturity that you reach when you're comfortable being who you are.
Yeah.
I don't think early on with KD, despite his intelligence, I don't think he may be as comfortable, even though the culture was what it was in OKC.
Right.
I think he's grown into where now I can take the bullets a little bit more. I'm more mature now. Once he got to Golden State, that's a whole different animal. And I'll say this, too.
He's a man.
Intelligence, I think you take a lot of what LeBron did in the league in regards to manipulating the system with things that he did off the court. Look at what KD did with the boardroom. Okay, look what he did in Silicon Valley business-wise.
Yeah, right.
So now he's maneuvering through all of these things, but the blueprint was set by that guy that's now in L.A. Now KD is taking that a little bit more and advancing not only his off-the-court, I mean, his on-the-court stuff, but his off-the-court stuff.
I'm going to analogize it to my favorite movie, The Godfather. Michael Corleone was supposed to be soft, and you stay out of this,
blah, blah, blah.
And then all of a sudden it turned out like, oh, damn, he's the real genius in the family.
Yeah.
That's what I think might be going on here with Kevin Durant, is he is the real genius in the NBA, and he's starting to flex like that.
And I agree with you 100%.
Enough said.
Let's ask this question.
Okay.
Layer two. Will KD be a real challenger to Jordan's legacy and throne?
No. And it's unfortunate. This is not even my take. This is just my assessment of how the barbershop is going to let this roll. And you know how the world. Yeah, this is how this is going
to
go. They already slicing KD up. He's not even looked at as a whole person and player like Jordan was, as great. You talk about Michael Jordan, he's a great player. You talk about KD, great scorer. Oh, one of the best shooters of all time. They already got him in subcategories. I'm like, that's not fair. And then they slice him up another level. They start talking about his championships and start putting the asterisk by it. This is the Kobe effect. Kobe Bryant won 3 championships with Shaquille O'Neal. And everybody was walking around and said, okay, Kobe, I see you 3-time champion. And then the other side of the fence was like, did you really win 3? Then I thought Kobe was buying into the fact, I got 3. I mean, throw them on the table. And then he won his 4th one, and he acted like it was his first. Then I realized, oh, Kobe listening to them too. So they can slice you, and they doing that to KD right now. Is it really the back-to-back finals MVP 2-time for you, or is it you and Steph, what you got to do when you leave? If he wins another one somewhere else, that's not going to be enough. And I don't think they're giving him proper credit for where he is right now.
And they're not giving him proper credit, but to the people who know basketball, they know that KD is an all-around great basketball player. He defends at a high level. He passes the ball at a high level. He rebounds at a high level. I mean, it's nothing really that Kevin Durant cannot do. And to me, I think he's on the verge of being one of the all-time greats. I mean, at the route he's going, listen, everybody say, oh, he went drawing the Warriors. KD didn't go call the Warriors and say, hey, I want to come over there. No, they recruited Kevin Durant. So that means the Warriors needed Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant didn't need the Warriors. He could have went anywhere.
But that's not how the story goes.
But I know, but this is how it is, though.
Yeah, I get
it. Here's the pushback, though. Because Jordan got the 6 rings, and he did it in Chicago.
Right.
KD got his, and if he gets another one this year in Golden State, like Marcelo says, an asterisk. Even if KD chooses to leave, and let's say he goes somewhere else and wins another 1 or 2 championship, it puts him in that stratosphere, maybe the top 5. Because from a skill perspective, straight skill perspective,
no doubt.
Mean, it's no one on the planet that touches his skills.
No.
But that part of it that, okay, those other couple championships were assisted by this, but Jordan did it by himself, Kobe. Now, I think he'll be ahead of Kobe, but I think to catch Michael, you got to start from a fresh slate in regards to kind of winning that in a different manner.
It has to be perfection.
I just think as a, you know, I'm a journalist, I'm a storyteller. I create narratives. And so if I'm KD, what I think he's thinking of, I'm gonna get this championship this year. He's not talking about one more championship wherever he goes. He's talking about maybe three.
Exactly.
And so if he somehow gets to 6 like Jordan, and then the extra layer of his story he will turn to is like, because I think he has a chance to catch Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on the all-time scoring list. And so then you start talking about Kareem had the sky hook, the most unstoppable shot. The second most unstoppable thing is the 7-foot KD who can hit you from anywhere on the floor.
Right.
That his length, and that's why Doug Gottlieb came in comparing him to Kareem, is like, man, these seven-footers, they got a little aloofness to them. And then this unstoppable shot. When this dude, he's done took Dirk Nowitzki's one-legged shot to a whole different level. He's unguardable.
He hit one in game one against Houston. That was
I ask you a question from a journalistic perspective? And I say this about time frames. That we're living in the time now, and we're coming off the back end of Michael Jordan, LeBron. So the journalists writing stuff lived in that era. The people that are going to be writing the stories 10, 15 years from now grew up with Kevin Durant and LeBron James. Mm. How does that narrative change from their perspective in that conversation?
Because
you know what I'm saying? You know?
Because I think what KD is thinking in his mind, mm-hmm. and again, I think he's like Michael Corleone, plays it close to the vest. He keeps LeBron close. He's not adversarial with LeBron, but he's like, we 3-3 now, championships, mm-hmm. after this year.
Right.
And I'm getting more, you're not.
But the, but see,
that's where,
right?
Hey, don't let this air-conditioned studio fool us, man. Let's go into the Hot Barbershop. And you've been there a lot lately. I see you tight. My boy Whitlock real tight right now. In the barbershop, they're going to look at Jordan as perfection. He stays still.
Yep.
He climbed the hill. Yes. Everything came to him. He never went on a seeking and journey to find it.
I agree.
You had to do that. Now, LeBron and KD are going to lose because they don't have a perfection story. They have a chasing journey, and you got to add everything up. But with Jordan, you don't even need a calculator. Okay. It's just easy. It's simple.
If I'm in that barbershop and people are going to make that argument, and again, I'm not arguing, Jordan to me will probably still be the GOAT.
Okay.
However, the other argument I would make is like, hey, man, Kevin Durant played in an era where there was someone more physically gifted than him.
Say it.
Michael Jordan did not.
Say it.
Magic Johnson, Larry Bird were not his equals in talent.
Wow.
Isaiah Thomas was too small. Michael Jordan had a physical advantage.
Yep.
Kevin Durant, with playing in the LeBron era, didn't have that physical advantage. And here he is going to end up with more titles potentially than LeBron and maybe more points. He'll have an argument.
Somebody going to look. That'd be $8. Who next? Like, physical greatness. Like that's like Deion Sanders.
That doesn't matter.
It does, but it's so low on a totem pole in terms of conversation. People going to say six rings. You're going to say, but he was more physically dominant. Six rings, and
But that's the old heads in the barbershop. Yeah. The younger generation who grew up with these guys going to give you a totally different perspective because this is how they grew up in the era where it didn't matter if you went to a different team. Those are the guys that are going to be writing the narrative 15, 20 years from now.
Yeah, but you're going against the narrative of folklore.
But listen.
Folklore.
Wilt Chamberlain was the greatest. Then it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Then it was this. Because the narrative and the people writing the story changed.
Right. No, Jordan has the greatest lead ever because he didn't grow up in social media, didn't play during it, and his warts were suppressed because we weren't conversing about everything he did every single day.
Now.
That protects him.
But 20 years from now, the people that are writing the storylines are the young people that grew up with these guys. They didn't see Jordan play. Nice. They only know what's there. What they do know is what LeBron did, what Steph did, what Durant did, and they're the ones, they might not even be using pen and paper there. I don't know. They might be using something else. I don't know.
Hey guys, Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show.
Time now for a big story from the NBA playoffs, where apparently the Rockets' obsession with the refs runs much deeper than Sunday's loss to the Warriors. Reportedly, the team audited last year's Western Conference Finals and produced a report claiming that they would have won if the refs hadn't made crucial errors in Game 7. Well, things could get more interesting tonight with ESPN's Brian Windhorst tweeting, quote, veteran official Scott Foster has been assigned to the Warriors Rockets tonight. Chris Paul, James Harden, and the Rockets have a long-running feud with Foster. He hasn't worked a Rockets game since February, when Harden was fined for criticizing him after fouling out of a game in Los Angeles. This whole scenario reminds me of the 2006 Dallas Mavericks versus the Miami Heat NBA Finals. Mark Cuban and Avery Johnson got obsessed with the officiating, and Dwayne Wade took him to school. I wrote a column then called The Cuban Whistle Crisis.
Nice.
That's what we have going on here. The God, Rockets are America. Too obsessed with officiating.
Yes.
Play your game.
Damn. That, Cuban Whistle Crisis?
Yes.
Major, I got one better, though.
What you got?
I got one better. All right. One, all this complaining will have an impact on this series. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that. When you're in the playoffs, it's do or die. You got to go for broke. Don't be too cool for school, and don't give a damn how it looks to those outside. This is a do or die circumstance. This is nothing but Phil Jackson philosophy 101. You know the coach with the most rings of all. You know why he has the most rings of all? Zen master, because he figures out moments like this. By putting this public pressure on the officials and all this conversation about the officials, only two things can happen. Either those officials come out there in game two and double down on being wrong, or they change their ways. And Houston's like, thank you. So Houston has put the Phil Jackson pressure on them. Telling you, no article written, Whitlock, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to work in Houston's favor.
I think the difference is the issue, Phil did it subtly in the media. And again, at the time, he didn't support it with documentation like Houston did. Now, Maury is an analytical person, so trust me, he's in the room breaking down the film and saying, this is how we're going to do it. My thing is this. I think it plays into the hands of officials being more critical over their judgment calls early in this game. Both teams got to watch out for because it could go the other way. Mm-hmm. I think the first 3 to 5 minutes are going to dictate exactly what happens in this game. Mm. The judgment calls, the block charge, is going to be in effect. Okay, I think they'll be called closer. I think the traveling calls a little bit more.
Ticky tack, you saying?
And the hand checking, little stuff like that, are going to be called a little bit closer because they can't give Golden State the advantage, as it looked like, and they can't go to the air to the side of Houston. So if I'm Golden State and I'm Steve Kerr, you know what I'm saying to my team? Whatever call the official makes, don't say a word. Don't say right or wrong. Mm. Just play the game. Because right now, it's too much pressure put on these officials to try to make the right call. And if you come out at the beginning of the game and start to contest everything they call, it's going to be some issues later on.
Well, what Scott Foster doing the game today, the NBA know what they was doing anyway. It's not going to be any complaining. It's going to be zero tolerance from the jump.
Exactly.
So the first team or first player, coach or whatever, to say something, they getting ticked up tonight. I could guarantee you that. Second of all, let's stop crying about this. I mean, the Rockets keep crying about the non-calls. I could recall several times that KD shot the ball and he couldn't land. Guys were under him, you know, and he didn't cry about it. The Rockets had several opportunities to win this game, and they should have won that game. Golden State played horrible. They had 20 turnovers, 15 unforced turnovers, and the Rockets should have won the game. They lost by 4 points. Clint Capella called I want Golden State, and didn't show up. P.J. Tucker didn't give them nothing.
Right.
Like, come on, man. Accountability is everything. And where's your mental toughness? Doc Rivers always told us, hey, listen, Perk, I don't mind you getting all the texts you want in the regular season. In the postseason, I need you to cut down because those points add up and it could cost us the game. Also, don't leave the game in the officials' hands. Go out. You've been resting for 5 to 6 days while Golden State was playing the Clippers. You flew into Golden State early and disrespected the Clippers and said you flew in while they was playing and disrespected the Clippers anyway. Why wasn't you rested? Why didn't you come out with more energy anyway and blow Golden State out? They played horrible. You should have won by 20, and you wouldn't be complaining about the officials today.
Marcellus, again, and I think you guys are all athletes. I'm sure your coach told you, control what you can control.
Yeah.
You can't control Scott Foster and the referees. Now, you can put pressure on them. Mm-hmm. And right now, Scott Foster is trending over Twitter. And to me, that's crazy.
It is.
That's the worst thing. The NBA doesn't want it. It's just like I said yesterday. At the end of the day, this is a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And they want good TV. Mm-hmm. And that's not James Harden sitting at the foul line 20 times tonight.
Hey, but complaining about the officials is controlling what you can control because they're human beings. They can't be controlled. Look, the whole psychology about being self-conscious, someone's, hey, well, you got something on your lip. The reason I can say that, and you'd be like, no, and then you'd be like, cool.
5 seconds are you like?
You go right there. I feel something.
It's a beautiful psychology where once you put someone on notice, they either have to do the same or they're conscious of doing different. And that's all they're playing. They're, both teams, let's give them credit. They know that you win some, you lose some. You get some calls, so you miss some calls. They both know that. But who wants to play the game of intelligence, the psychology, Zen master? Who wants to go out there and make him trend? Because now when he comes out there, will he swallow his whistle?
So listen, my question is, if you Golden State, if you Steve Kerr, and you telling Steph and Clay to shoot, you telling them to do the same thing?
I'm gonna see how it works.
I would tell them to play your same game because the officials either gonna adjust to it or not.
Right.
Play your same game. Now, this is where I think the NBA made a mistake. On the 2 minute rule, when they let out at the end of the game, after the game, the calls that were missed. Because it gives relevance right now for a team like Houston to go in and say, well, the NBA said they missed these calls. Okay, now that puts the officials in the back. I know you want to clean it up and make sure that there's no, you know, favoritism, you know, going on. I know you want to show it, but you can't do it this way because it puts too much pressure on the officials. Plus, it gives the team that was in the negative in regards to maybe missed calls, more ammunition to come back and do what they did right now.
But see, and then that goes to show the separation between James Harden and Kevin Durant. Because when it was down in the stretch, under 7 minutes to go in the game, and the game was close, and it was a possession game, KD took over. He didn't need the refs to help him out. He took over down the stretch. Steph hit a crucial three, but KD took over. Okay, James, on the other hand, on the other end, he could take over because he needed the help of the officials. KD didn't need the help of officials. He went out there, put the team on his back, and scored down wherever he wanted to. And James, he was crying for the fouls, and that's the difference between...
Kendrick, I love your point because what James Harden is screaming is, I know y'all calling me the MVP. Mm-hmm. I know y'all saying I had the best season. But the reality is, I have a referee-dependent game. Mm. Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, they can go get it regardless of what the officials do. Me, I got to have some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's screaming. And it's just wrong. Look, Steph and Klay came into that last game banged up, didn't play well, and you didn't go get it. You got your trips to the line. I think he shot 14 free throws, more than he shoots in the regular season.
True.
You didn't get it done. It's an insecure thing that they're doing, and they're screaming, just like Mark Cuban and the Mavericks did in 2006. We can't do this on our own. We're looking around for the officials to help us out, and it's an insecure play. Mm-hmm. They, to me, gives Golden State confidence and undermines the confidence of Houston.
Okay, well, I wouldn't go as far as insecure for me because there is gamesmanship that always occurs in sports, and when you rely on it as a crutch and it's taken away from you in a moment, you need time to self-correct. Case in point, we're in the trenches. We play D-line, offensive lineman. They hold on every play. Now, if you get into a playoff game and the officials like flag, and you're like, wait a minute, these grippers been working for 16 games, and now you got that lineman is going to struggle for a minute, right? And we don't have a playoff series, so it might just be game over for that guy. I'm with you, Jimmy. I'm not liking the NBA's transparency without consequence in the last 2 minutes. You can't have words without actions. Stop telling me you got it wrong. I need some results to change, or else don't even be transparent, because it's without merit. It's without base.
And if I'm petty, if I'm Bob Myers, you want to talk about reviewing tape, I can be very petty right now and say, you know what, Chris Paul shouldn't be playing.
Oh,
the inadvertent contact he had with the official.
Yes.
You want to talk about letter of the law?
Not
you
fine.
Made contact with an official, you get fined, but guess what? You can't play the next game. Mm. I can be petty. So pick and choose your battles, Houston, when you talk about reviewing stuff. And
but
things
Jimmy,
not going your
that
way.
That was a makeup call. That was a grand makeup call.
But I'm
we
saying,
ain't going to kick them out because we know we messed up.
But understand, I can push that narrative if I'm Golden State.
True.
Okay, but I'm not. But that's why you walk that thin line when you start talking about making these complaints all the time, how it can affect you.
Joined now by Fox NFL analyst Mark Slareth. Let's move to Kansas City, where reportedly Tyreek Hill could be placed on the commissioner's exempt list this week, which would suspend him from all NFL activities indefinitely. Whatever happens with Hill, it seems likely that Patrick Mahomes will have to make do without one of his top receivers as he tries to follow up on last year's incredible MVP season. All right, listen, we don't want to make light of the issues surrounding Tyreek Hill, but we do want to talk about the football. We'll find out what's going to happen to him criminal-wise later. But football-wise, to me, it looks like he's going to be out for the year if Adrian Peterson misses a year. And I just don't feel the same, just as a Chiefs fan. You take away Tyreek Hill, I don't feel like this is a Super Bowl favorite or even a Super Bowl contender this year. Tyreek Hill has a Randy Moss-type impact. Not quite as good, but type impact on an offense. I just don't see how they can replace that.
Super Bowl favorite? No. Super Bowl contender? Yes. Still in the mix. Kind of in the pack now. Chargers. We saw the Chargers go out there in KC Arrowhead late in the season and beat this team with a Tyreek Hill. You take him away now, what's going to happen? You talk about the Patriots, obviously, Texans, whoever else could be in that mix. But they're not the favorites. They're not number one anymore. And it's exactly what you said, the Randy Moss effect. I remember playing against early Randy Moss when it was a little unknown and you had miscalculations of his speed. Like, you thought he was fast, and then you realized what fast really was. And Randy Moss was able to take the lid off of our defense. We had a defense one time up 3 points against them in Minnesota called Prevent Plus, which is not only are we back, we way back. Like, we in the stands. Like, we defended from the stands going forward. And we knew Randy Moss was going to either run his post or he's going to run his streak. He ran his streak. And we were back 30, 40, 50 yards, it seemed like. And he still ran by everybody. Watching Tyreek Hill live, and you can see the energy, the presence, and the effect it has on the secondary. Just him just running around. Everyone is now consumed with that guy, which opens up spacing for Travis Kelce, the running game, everything else. Yes, it's going to be a domino effect, but I still think they're in the mix.
Yeah, I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender without him. He is the most shocking athlete in the National Football League. Talking to Wink Martindale, defense coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, said he is the fastest. He goes, I've been doing this for a long time. In pads, he's the fastest player I've ever seen.
And quickest.
Yeah, he's yes. Shocking. You know, when you talk to players who played against Randy Moss, they'd say on film, you'd convince yourself during the week that I could run with him, right? And because he was so smooth and he was so fluid. And then he goes, you'd line up on him, and within two steps, he's three steps by you. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, my Lord. Yeah. Tyreek Hill is that guy. Now, not only is he that guy, but think about this. Think about him motioning across with a jet sweep motion. You fake the handoff. Everybody on that side of the ball, defensive end, outside linebacker, safety, they all hesitate. There's no constriction. Then you hand the ball down the middle. That's a 5-yard gain with a cutback, makes it 8, 10, 12 yards because nobody constricts. He opens up lanes in the running game. He's in the screen game, you've got to account for him. In the jet sweep game, you've got to account for him. And I could show you dozens of plays where Patrick Mahomes carelessly just throws the ball knowing that Tyreek Hill is streaking down the middle of the field somewhere and saying on a 4th-and-9 play when Baltimore had them beat,
playoffs,
you know what?
Yes.
He threw it down the middle of the football field and said, go get it, big fella, or little fella. This guy. And he went and got it. Like, he is the most dynamically gifted athlete in the National Football League. And you can't, I don't care who you got. They don't replace that.
How does it impact Patrick Mahomes individually? MVP season, 50 touchdowns. I see without Tyreek Hill, those numbers have to come down to me.
Well, I think they were going to come down even with Tyreek Hill. I mean, to go out there and have repeat 50 touchdown performances was going to be a difficult task because now there's an entire body of film on you. They were going to try and defend him differently, but he throws darts. Like you said, constriction and space, it's going to be tighter windows. But he throws darts. Like, he doesn't just have the deep ball, but the accuracy that you need, the mobility to extend plays, it will have an effect on him in terms of the numbers. But I still think that he's going to be an MVP caliber quarterback. It's just the fact that now you're going to have to use weapons in different ways, and you're not going to have the guy that takes the lid off.
Here's the interesting thing about Patrick Mahomes. It's something I call offensively a 70-30 league. So 70% of the time you're on schedule. 70% of the time you drop back, you throw the swing pass, you throw the bubble screen, you throw the slant, you hand the ball off, right? 70% of the time in the NFL, you're on schedule. And Patrick Mahomes is as good as there gets, man. Manipulating safeties, understanding where he wants to throw the ball, he's great. Accurate, like you said, big arm, all those things. Here's where it hurts. The 30% of the time when things break down. Yeah. Because in the 30% of the time when things break down, you know where the ball went about 70% of the time? The 30% it went to Tyreek Hill. Right. He found it. Remember the left-handed pass? you know, remember the little boom, you know, sidearm stuff. It was the off-schedule broken plays that all of a sudden became crazy touchdowns. That was, you know, that accounted for chunk yardage. Like anytime you get into an NFL game, if you can get four or five chunk plays, 30 plus yard plays, man, you're gonna have a chance to win that game. You're gonna have big time chances to win that game. That's what that kid did. And that's gone.
I think the other thing is Pat Mahomes' second favorite target, or maybe throws to him the most, is Travis Kelce. No Tyreek Hill. I think there's less room for Travis Kelce to operate over the middle.
Oh, definitely.
When you take a Tyreek Hill. This people aren't really talking about it. I don't think the Chiefs, to me, with the loss of Tyreek Hill and this trouble he's in, the Chiefs have taken a big step back.
Oh, I was going to say, he's got what I would call it Pepto-Bismol speed. meaning you got to drink Pepto-Bismol because you got diarrhea watching him on film. That's how fast he is for defensive players. So he's got Pepto speed.
There's no Tyreek Hill out there. They try to draft Mecole Hardman in the second round from Georgia. He's that type of guy to try and replace him. But what no one's talking about is Patrick Mahomes is like Big Ben with a smile. How I lose my running back and my receiver, and I ain't even got a radio show calling him out. Like, he's really in the same place as Big Ben.
Hi, Tom Beaudet here for Studio 6. I thought I'd play a little game with you. He's a 6, but has clean, comfortable rooms, a kitchen to cook in, fresh coffee to brew, great Wi-Fi. Oh, and he loves to do long-term. 10, right? I'd say Studio 6 is definitely a 10. I'm Tom Beaudet for Studio 6, but really 10, where you get more in your room and less on your bill.
Jim Jackson's back with us.
Yay.
Time to get antisocial.
Yay. Hold on, let me. Darnell got swole over. I got to unbutton my coat.
Somebody's hurt. Darnell, what's popping on those Twitter streets?
Sir, let's get it started with LeBron, who's been pretty active on social media as of late. Last night, he gave a shout out to some players in the Blazers Nuggets game for rocking his new Martin inspired shoes. The only problem was he completely butchered Denver guard Torrey Craig's name, called him Daniel Craig, the famous actor.
I called him Jenny Craig.
Right. He later went on to tweet and post a correction with this follow-up saying, wouldn't mind seeing Daniel Craig in them 007 movies as well. Is LeBron dealing with a severe case of FOMO?
Wow. We're missing out, huh?
He can't live tweet like the rest of us.
He was lit, last night, boy.
He had that drink.
He had some wine. You know what I'm saying?
That wine is sneaky, huh? That's why we bring it.
He's like everybody else, me included, addicted to social media and stuff. When stuff goes on in the sports world, you want to tweet out your thoughts.
That's real. But it's different levels of addiction. Like, y'all were in the back of the center. Like, way in the back. Whitlock and LeBron, y'all be tweeting out. I be sometimes like, I should tweet out that was a crazy play or a call. But I was like, nah. Then I look, Whitlock did. I'm like, I got to get on that game.
Hey, look, sometimes it happens. It happened to me. I'm thinking one name and put something else and catch it.
Come on, man.
And you know the Twitter police go get you.
On your head.
What? Mm-hmm. Especially somebody like this that's already bait. Right. Tweet bait for
our next story. I did one, but nobody caught it yet. Y'all some dummies out there. I did one. It's coming.
Yeah, let's sprint over to the track.
On
Saturday, Houston, Texas high school track star Matthew Bowling.
We're going to show the whole race to you.
It's only 9.9 seconds.
Quick. Broke the national high school record in the 100-meter dash, finishing in 9.98 seconds.
Oh.
First high school runner to break the 10-second mark since Trayvon Bromell in 2013. He even got some traction in the NFL with Rams safety Eric Weddle tweeting, no way that's a white boy. Marcellus, we know you're a big fan.
Damn right.
What can you tell us about White Lightning?
Oh, man, White Lightning has just raised the bar for all white sprinters of all time. This is their Obama.
And all black sprinters.
What?
No, yeah, he's the fastest dude in all conditions, which is an asterisk, but still it counts. He the fastest dude to ever been in high school.
That's crazy.
Y'all hear me? Uh-huh. And he's white, so that's their Obama right now. Like, he's the first. Like, he is the one. And I respect him so much. I'm a big fan of him. My boy put me on to him a couple weeks ago, and I've been watching him. He's next level, man. 46 in the 400, 20.5 in the 200. And
wait,
this is the first
26
year.
Jumping. I mean, long
26,
jump.
26.8 in the long jump. All in, going to Georgia next year.
You know this was his first year running 100, though.
Yes.
So I looked up. I was looking at it because my guys grew up as track guys. So I used to love to go to track meets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So watching this, and I was just kind of just reading it through, I was like, oh, this boy got a little swag, too.
Got something to him.
He got an award on stage, and he kind of caught the award and walked off, you know. And it's a track dude. This ain't no Hooper football player. It's a track dude with swag. I was like.
Dog, we had a coach. I ain't going to call out my coach because this is along the line. Every time we had camp, he would look in the line of the running backs and DBs. And if he see a white dude, he'd be like, what you doing over there? You know that's the wrong neighborhood for you. You know you ain't over there with them brothers. You run a 4-4. And he was a white coach. Right. He used to always cloud the white guys. Respect for this brother.
Respect.
Deion Sanders said he can run.
Oh, no, yeah.
He can run. All right, man, let's move to the gridiron. Where last month, Clay Matthews signed with the Los Angeles Rams after playing in Green Bay for almost a decade. Well, the Packers didn't waste any time in handing out the 6-time Pro Bowler's number to another player. The Packers tweeted out a picture of their first-round draft pick, Rashawn Gary, wearing the number 52 to congratulate him. Well, Clay was quick to comment on the post by saying, quote, the body's not even cold yet. Did the Packers do Clay dirty here?
Nah.
No.
Obviously, already? They just told you ain't getting in the Hall of Fame and retiring your jersey.
Oh, I don't think they're saying that.
You don't think they're saying that?
Well, they ain't retiring his jersey.
I think they got a first-round draft pick that likes that number, and I think Clay Matthews is actually joking. He ain't got no problem with it.
No, he ain't got a problem with it, but they also saying, we ain't got a problem giving your number out. like, they don't give your number out if it's even like, we gonna retire this. They probably put him in a ring of honor, as he deserves.
Yeah. Right.
But they giving that
when Brett left, did somebody get number 4 right away?
Oh, good question. I doubt that.
I don't think so.
Has anybody won? Mason Crosby, was he number 4? I can't remember.
What? I don't know. Yeah. That'll solve that question right there.
But admit it, everybody.
He ain't Brett Favre.
But I'm just saying. But I'm just saying.
Jimmy, every time you leave a team, you look immediately. Hey, what they doing with that number?
Mine got spread around 12 times.
They sharing your number.
Yeah, let's get back to some hoops.
Okay.
Where it's no secret that Kevin Durant is a free agent this summer. And while I'm sure he'll get many Tipton offers, Golden State seems to have a tasty edge. In an article with GQ, Warriors fan and celebrity chef Guy Fieri explain how important it is to keep KD in the Bay, even going as far as cooking a man dinner. He said, quote, you tell me what I can do. Tell me if I need to flex my food muscles and make it happen. Guys, what meal will persuade you to stay?
Man. My mama's pizza casserole. It's one of the greatest dishes in the world.
Pizza casserole?
It's one of the greatest deals in the world.
I ain't never heard of that.
That's brand new.
That's next level. My mama tacos with ketchup on it and that orange grease hitting that elbow coming down. Let me get a 10-piece, mama, all day.
Ain't no food making me sad. I want that money green salad. That's about it. You give me that might be a different conversation.
Hey, give me another one. I'll take one.
Money green salad.
That's well, so look, good.
My mother will be here for Mother's Day. I'm not going to invite
you.
Oh,
come on, man. I didn't say I wasn't going to enjoy it.
You don't want it. You want that money.
All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
All right, guys, as we all heard, you know, sadly yesterday, legendary film director John Singleton passed away. Our condolences obviously goes out to all his loved ones and friends and family. And we know John's had a lot of great movies, but one that he's probably most famous for is Boys in the Hood.
Man.
So I wanted to ask, what do you remember most from the movie?
Let me first say respect to him and the family. I've known him since college. Just talked to him a few weeks ago. My condolences. But let me say, that movie was the best portrayal of the neighborhood life because it showed the illnesses, not just the symptoms. Everybody got caught up in the violence and the drugs and the gangs, the poverty. He showed the broken family. Yeah. He showed the guy who's aspirational through his books, aspirational through his game on the football field, and somebody who's just running the hood, being the big brother who just got out. All these real elements, like before, it was a lot of it being production, and it was just a little too glossy. That was the first real look of how it was in the hood.
One of the favorite scenes for me, I'm gonna be honest, was when right after Ricky got shot. Mm. So Trey is back, he's in his bedroom, he got blood on his, you know, pants and his shirt, and he pulls out the gun and loads it up. So he's walking out like he's gonna go do something. They're furious, his father, which is Larry Fishburne, standing right there. So what you go do? You go out and shoot somebody? So if you go shoot somebody, shoot me. You know? Then he looked at him like, give me the gun. Give me the gun.
Yeah.
You know, authoritative, but soon as Trey gave it to him, as a strong father, he gave him a hug. Because he knew at that point his son was going through something. He was trying to do something that was out of his element, and it was him as a father that needed to control that situation.
Love it.
Furious Styles is what I remember from the movie as well. He reminded me of my own father. My father was a good-looking, smooth guy. But he also, me and my father didn't have we had confrontations.
Right.
We had big confrontations. Mm-hmm. My father was always right, but it would take me years to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the violent confrontation mm-hmm. about where I'm going. But my father had a problem with one of my very best friends.
Yeah.
And we went toe to toe. And I always disobeyed my father until my friend had me waiting outside of a crack house.
Yep.
And I was like, this is what my father's talking about. As soon as I got this dude home, we ain't never been in the same car since. And I was like, this is what my father's talking about. So that's what the movie sticks
before
to me.
Before we ask you, too, one of my favorite scenes, too, was Nia Long running down the street. She was sweaty.
She was jogging
in the neighborhood. I was like, okay, man, I got to get to L.A.
Oh, how about with him and Regina King, Doughboy, sitting in there? You better go to the store with that. That was my favorite part.
Oh, man. My favorite part is kind of following the scene you were saying when he walked in with the guns. Right after that, I believe, is when he snuck out. And he was with his homeboys in the car. He was on the way to do something he didn't need to be doing. And I think his father's thoughts came in his head. He's like, let me out.
Let me out the car.
Let me out. And that's why it always stuck to me.
Can't we go somewhere without y'all always fighting and shooting?
Oh, yeah. What? Shut up. What? When they was on the street right there?
Right.
Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Schlereth is back with us. Let's talk some more NFL. Sponsored by Toyota. Let's go places. Let's move to Josh Rosen, who is going to Miami after being shipped out of Arizona to make room for Kyler Murray. According to a report, there was actually a chance the Cardinals were going to keep Rosen, and he says that he absolutely would have competed for the starting job if they had given him the chance. Look, I think Arizona made a clear mistake here. Troy Aikman, the Cowboys had Troy Aikman drafted Steve Walsh number one in the supplemental draft. There's been other examples of two quarterbacks in their prime on teams, and you wait and trade them and flip them for far more than a second and fifth. They should have held on to Josh Rosen and traded him when someone got hurt during the season or during training camp or this summer, rather than panicking and moving him now.
Yeah, that's one way to play it. I would have played it exactly how Arizona did, though. This is a position that's not a rotational position. So once we designate our guy, the other guy's just sitting there, maybe a couple plays, wildcat here or there, something random, but not even these two type of quarterbacks. I wouldn't see them playing much. So if you think about it, how does Josh Rosen increase his value? He was the 35th ranked quarterback of 35 qualified quarterbacks last year. He's not going to beat out the guy you're rooting for in Kyler Murray, who you just drafted number one overall. So I think they got as much as they could and also kept it clean in that meeting room for Kyler Murray to flourish.
I think there's a couple of things here. You could keep him, certainly, and hope that somebody gets hurt. But the style of offense that you're going to play now with Kyler Murray and with Cliff Kingsbury, I just don't know that he fits in that style of offense. And listen, there's nothing wrong with the kid. He's a smart kid. He's an articulate kid. I've met with him several times. He was playing for a really bad football team in Arizona. And sometimes the best thing you can do is rip off the Band-Aid. You're going in a different direction. Give the kid another chance. Sometimes that resonates best in the locker room other than holding the kid down and holding him for ransom. Mm. Because it makes you look at the organization going, really, this is what you're going to do to the kid? You just drafted him 10 overall. You already fired a coach that we actually liked, but you didn't give him much of a chance. I think it's good just to get him out of the build and say, we went in a different direction, and we're moving forward.
Eagles held on to Sam Bradford and drafted Carson Wentz, traded Sam Bradford after I think the Vikings had problems, got a first-round pick for it. Again, I go back to Steve Walsh. The Cowboys in 90, I think, flipped him for a first, second, and third-round pick. I don't think they should have been in a rush to get rid of Josh Rosen. Well, that serves the Dolphins and Josh Rosen more than it does the Arizona Cardinals.
But the flashes from Sam Bradford were brighter and more extensive than Josh Rosen last year, and he wouldn't have opportunity to go forward to show you that again because of the offense and the style of play. So whatever you thought of Josh Rosen last year, which by the numbers was the worst quarterback that qualified, how could he make it any better? I think second round is about as high as it's going to get.
Yeah, I think it would. Well, I think you make a good point about holding on. If somebody is desperate, maybe you get more, but you don't get more this year. Mm. You get more next draft. You get more, and they're a football team. Having called five of their games, they were awful. And so for them, they're looking at how can we get more dynamic now We got a different quarterback. We're going in a different direction. How can we get more dynamic now? They got a second-round pick. They turned it into that Isabella kid, I think is his name, that can flat run. So they're looking at, we've got to build now. If you're general manager Steve Keim, and you went through what you went through the last year, and your team was that bad, listen, you're fighting for your general managing life right now. And so that's the direction they went in.
And let's not make light of, you get a second rounder and a fifth rounder on your squad going forward versus, respectfully, a dead weight backup quarterback because he's not going to get opportunities out there. So you get some personnel.
All right, before we go, I'd like to say a word or two about Kyler Murray and a story written about him by ESPN's The Undefeated website. The story is headlined, Why Kyler Murray will face more pressure than most number one picks. The author, Jason Reed, rather predictably, pointed to race, writing, Murray, however, will face an additional level of scrutiny. The fact is, he's on a path few black men have the opportunity to travel. At this point in the article, there was a musical interlude by the Fisk University Jubilee singers, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, coming for to carry me home. Since 2007, there have been 9 quarterbacks selected number one overall in the NFL draft. 5 have been white, 4 have been black. As it relates to the NFL, when it comes to quarterback, it's no longer 1978, the year Hall of Famer Warren Moon went undrafted. You know why I know this? Because Warren Moon says so in the very same Undefeated article that tries to paint the picture that Kyler Murray just landed on Plymouth Rock and has applied for the job of local sheriff. Here's what Warren Moon had to say. There's no question that there's still racism out there, and no matter what he does, it won't be good enough for some people. But that's really more outside of the game. At this point, that's really more with some people in the media. The people inside the game, the ones actually making the decisions, will see how he plays, how he leads, and reach their conclusions. Let me translate that for you. There's more bigotry in the media than in the NFL. There's an unnatural, illogical, and unhealthy obsession with race in modern American media. Social media rewards divisive race baiting, and the mainstream media are addicted to social media rewards. If the media behave properly, here's the gist of an accurate story on Kyler Murray and race. Kyler Murray's rise to number one signals the golden era of black quarterbacks. Murray is a symbol of an amazing American progress, at least in the NFL. Things are getting better. The Arizona Cardinals ditched a 22-year-old white quarterback they traded up to get 1 year ago to select a 5'10" black 1-year college starter. The mainstream media are constantly colluding with Silicon Valley's social media companies to stir racial division. I'm not suggesting a conspiracy. I'm acknowledging an obvious fact. The easiest path to social media relevance is racial demagoguery. And no group craves social media relevance more than members of the American media. The media are rabbits chasing the Northern California race-baiting carrot. In pursuit of 1 million followers, former CNN host Soledad O'Brien has followed 452,000 people, tweeted nearly 70,000 times, and litters her page with this kind of race baiting. If we were still playing this game, he congratulated the white guy who's the number 2 draft pick, but not the black guy who's the number 1 draft pick. O'Brien is using race to troll our president. She's hoping to ride that social media wave and be the next Jemele Hill. It's a formula that always works on Twitter. O'Brien received 18,000 retweets and 70,000 likes. She's beyond thrilled. The extra pressure on Kyler Murray and black quarterbacks isn't from the NFL, it's from the American media, intent on using them as tools to increase social media traction by dividing Americans along racial lines. Whitlock and Wiley, Jim Jackson and Kendrick Perkins are back. Let's move to Oklahoma City, where Russell Westbrook rubbed a lot of people the wrong way down the stretch this year, with several dust-ups with the media to go along with yet another early playoff exit. Now even people within the Thunder organization, like general manager Sam Presti, are acknowledging that Russ's behavior might need to change.
I'm not going to let 11 years or 10 and a half years of his contributions and performance be completely overshadowed by a couple pretty tough months, okay? And so we talk about those things. And as the leader of the team and the face of the franchise, as you said, you know, we'll have those conversations. So yeah, would we prefer if he handled a few things differently? Sure, we've talked about that.
I like this coming from OKC. They're being transparent that Russ needs to make some adjustments. I like it, but I'm not that confident that Russ can change. I think it's hard. He's 30 years old. He plays basketball with an angry spirit. I think it's the wrong spirit for a point guard. I think it'll be difficult for him to change.
I'm extremely confident, just based off of watching and witnessing him the last few years. And it's funny, like, you know, in your teenage years when you go through your growth spurt, there's always someone who says, I didn't know you were getting that tall because I see you every day, right? We see Westbrook all the time, but we don't know notice his growth. Year one without KD, goes out there, wins the MVP, right? Balls out, takes it on his shoulders. Year two, Paul George comes in the mix. Okay, first year playing with you, but I'm an MVP. I'm trying to figure this out. Year three, this year, he deferred. Paul George was the MVP candidate into the shoulder. And then all of a sudden, Westbrook was like, all right, I got you, big dog, until you come back. And he never fully came back. Next year, they're bringing back coach. They're bringing back these guys collectively. I think you're going to see continued growth from Westbrook.
I agree. I think Russ, he's matured a lot. I mean, from when I was playing with him, I mean, literally, he has, it's been like 0 to 100. The way he's getting guys involved, I'm watching his communication skill on the court. He's not hanging his head after bad plays anymore. I mean, Russ is who he is as far as with the media. I don't think you could change that. His swag, the way he comes dressed to the game, the way he approaches the game. You know, they had a write-up about him, you know, with his dad say, your only friend is Wilson, meaning the basketball, when he step on the court. And he has kind of went away from that, and he's trying to be a leader. Some people are born with natural leadership skills. Some people just don't have them for as on the court leadership skills. Just because you're a point guard don't make you a leader. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, Russ is who he is. But I have seen him mature over the last couple of years, but he is who he is, you know? And I don't think, you know, it's too much you can really do about it besides, you know, like I said, you have to make a change. Russ have to respect you. I think you have to make a change. And you know, I think it got to be another voice in the locker room.
Change it, coach.
That's my thing. Because Russ keep getting the blame. And it's not all Russ' fault. Billy Donovan has to get blame in this situation. He lost the 3-1 league in the Western Conference Finals. He lost 3 years in a row in the first round. And nobody is saying nothing about Billy Donovan. If there was anybody else, Jason Kidd lost his job. And he was winning in Milwaukee. We're doing a pretty good job. I mean, come on. I mean, how many chances do we get? But nobody, I turn on my TV every day and watch sports and watch things about basketball. Nobody says nothing about Billy Donovan.
Jim Jackson does.
I do. Okay. I do. And I'm going to take it two ways. If I'm GM hat, if I'm Sam Presti, I understand that I can push, but I can push so hard because here's our friend, the face of the franchise. Without a Westbrook, OKC is totally different. Even if you have a Paul George, okay?
Right.
I think you got to be careful because they know that in OKC, building a team is more difficult there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your superstar in place, so we got to walk a thin line. And Westbrook understood that when KD left, that he had the opportunity to have leverage. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Ken, and I wanted to pose it to you because you were there.
Okay.
I've always said that players want to be coached
right.
by people they respect, mm-hmm. somebody in their ear. That with Scottie Brooks and with Billy Donovan, no one has ever held Russ accountable that he really trusted,
agreed.
That he had a voice. And for somebody that played with him, people, I get pushback all the time.
Me.
That right here. Yeah. About
Westbrook
that he can't,
is Donovan's biggest supporter.
But that doesn't matter.
To the
media. Here's my thing.
I mean, to the
do you
public.
Think he would be a different player if it was a guy in that first seat, the head coach.
Like a Monty Williams.
Like a Monty Williams that held him accountable and that he really respected.
I do. And I think it's almost like you raising your children. You know what I mean? You tell your kid, hey, don't touch that stove. and burn his hand, right? Or you tell your kid, don't go across. You give him as much leash as you can. Mm. But with Russ, they gave so much leash that you can't pull it back. It's like walking your dog, you can't pull it back. So you have to me, it's time for a change, in my opinion. And you have to bring somebody in that locker room that's gonna hold Russ accountable, that he's gonna respect.
Preach.
And that's
why is Westbrook his biggest public supporter? He seems to be. That's the smokescreen?
Because he don't want to be known as a coach killer.
No, I think it's deeper. I mean, it's we're all guilty of this. Your favorite teacher in a moment is the nicest, easiest one. Get okay. When you look back, you be like, the one that was strict taught me those things. And Westbrook, in the moment you ask him, you're going to love him. But he needs more.
Right, so let me ask y'all this. So during the series of OKC and Portland, right, I tweeted out and I said, OKC needs to dominate the paint. Portland don't have any shot blockers. Ennis Cantor is a liability defensive, but excellent offensive, right? OKC made no adjustments. They kept shooting threes. Mm-hmm. They didn't get Russ on the block with Dame guarding them. They didn't post them up. They didn't get nothing going to the basket. Okay, cool. They lose the series. What did Denver do last night? They punished Portland in the paint. They punished them. They gave them a heavy dose of Jokic.
Yep.
Millsap was in the paint. I mean, they punished them in the paint all year, all day long.
Why can't I blame Westbrook for that in terms of Steven Adams is a guy that I think has got a lot of upside.
He do. He's one of my top five centers.
And they never feature that.
Well, what are you coaching for, though? I mean, at the end of the day, if you see Russ not calling the play, why you don't call it?
Drop the mic.
Uncle Jimmy's here. Thoughts so far on the show?
My thoughts is, once again, it's just a pleasure for y'all to have me. And it's a pleasure for you to have me. All right, let's get on to it. Let's get with the dummy of the day.
Yeah.
It's what?
Big dummy of the day goes to whoever this is that is determined to keep thinking that America cares to hear a Whitlock. That's the big dummy of the day.
What's wrong with Whitlock?
Hey, what's right with it?
You don't like long-form media anymore? Right. What's wrong with Whitlock?
Here's a highlight
my dog.
From our discussion earlier about Kevin Durant.
Knowledge is king.
Kevin Durant is the smartest player in basketball. He's played a very patient game of chess, while many of us, including yours truly, have evaluated him like he's playing checkers.
He goes beyond intelligence, and he gets into a world we call he's too sensitive. His sensitivity is something that I think is really genius.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you still got your tag on your suit.
Broke. Broke. Say it again, and broke. I'm just going to stay on here until I get a contract. Now.
Nordstrom's return
package.
You have
a take on Kevin Durant.
I darn sure do. Man, let me tell you something. I'm going to start this off again. I told you before. Uncle Jimmy's a heartbreaker, a lovemaker, a no-ish taker. And just based on that alone, this is why I say we need to have an Uncle Jimmy log. That's what we need.
Okay. You have a point about
Listen,
Kevin
boy,
Durant.
Don't you raise your voice at me.
Go ahead.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant joining the Golden State Lakers, Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant joining the Golden State Warriors is the equivalent of Johnny Gill joining New Edition.
Going here?
Keep in mind, now you say he the smartest player in the game. That could be true. I'm telling you, Johnny Gill might be one of the most smartest players in the game from New Edition. Keep in mind, hold on, roll with me for a minute.
Help me.
New Edition already won awards before Johnny got there. Cool it now. cool it now. Telephone Man.
Yeah.
Candy Girl.
Yeah.
Huh? Just like Golden State.
Yeah.
They all won a couple of awards. They had their characters all picked out. Mr. Sensitivity, like you said.
Yeah.
That was Steph Curry. Ronnie DeVoe. that was Klay Thompson. Okay. Andre Ugly Dollar. That was Michael Bivins. And then of course, Draymond Green was that crazy ass Bobby Brown trying to mess everything up. But it wasn't until Johnny Gill arrived that New Edition got their legitimacy.
What?
You know, it's the same thing, the transformation that KD gave Golden State. You know, that's when that was when they, these are the things that change boys to men. Remember, everybody liked Golden State. What was they called? Them little cute little beige brothers and their little style of play.
Right, right.
Hey, remember now, Johnny Gill, you know, what'd he do? You know, he went on to form him, but he left New Edition when they was on top and went and formed their own little group called LSG. Called, had the late great Gerald LaVert, Johnny Gill, and our very own Mr. Beef Sweat. That they went on to hit the charts.
Hold on, you left somebody out of the Golden State deal. Who's Boogie Cousins?
Ah! I'm glad you brought that. Oh, that's Biz Markie.
What?
New Edition. He wasn't in New Edition.
Yeah, exactly, but he tried to join the group. He wanted to be in there.
Oh, that's cold.
And everybody loved him, but he couldn't sing. You know, they up here, can you stand? And he talking about, yo, got what I need. But you sang, and they like, oh. Man, Golden State was so happy when he tore that hamstring, they didn't know what to do.
Quad,
that ain't
right.
That ain't true.
That ain't right.
I kind of like the New Edition.
I felt it, yeah. You
I kind of like that. No, not bad.
Love unconditional.
Yeah.
Hit him with it.
I'm not as ma.
If you don't move that tag, really look
give
at
me
it.
A contract, man.
I'm going to my approval rating for Kevin Durant.
Okay.
I've itched him up. He was a GOAT in our previous rating just a couple weeks ago or a
respect.
Week ago. I've moved him up. Stayed the same in job performance, 24, all-time greatest, 22. Hmm. Moved him up a point in character. I've got a new burgeoning respect for KD.
Okay.
And that's why I moved him up also 2 points in authenticity from a 15 to a 17.
Yeah.
I'm starting to understand KD better. 84, GOAT status.
Oh, I love it, man. I still got him at GOAT status. Everything stays the same except one of my favorite attributes about an athlete is we self-correct. Last time we did KD, you reminded me about that burner. Damn it. That burner got to take a hit, brother. I forgot about the burner. Other than that, man, KD is a great. He's a GOAT, man.
Well, look, Marcellus. Mm.
You.
Perkins said that he had the burner count.
You got the need.
For OKC, that was an excuse.